Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thanks for joining us. This is Bruce Norris. Once again today, we're joined by Jack Kaiser. Jack is the chief economist on the staff of the Los Angeles County Economic Development Corporation. He's known as a guru of the Los Angeles economy by the LA Business Journal, and Mr. Kaiser is responsible for interpreting and forecasting economic trends in the LA five-county area. Jack, welcome back.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk with you.
Interesting, probably 10 days since we last talked. Governor Schwarzenegger came out and said we'd be looking at a 10% budget cut next year. How does that affect the plans for a city the size of L.A. and for our five counties?
It's going to trickle down to all five counties, every city in each of the five counties, because there's a lot of programs that would probably be cut back. And local governments, I think, are probably a little bit nervous because the housing slowdown, decline in prices, could set off a request for downward reassessments, which would put more pressure on their budgets. And one of the unsettling things is over the past few years, people haven't noted this, that government employment has been one of the faster-growing job sectors in the area.
Absolutely. We'll talk about the strike in just a second, but you did mention that the movie industry was about the third largest employer. Where does the real estate business fit into the rankings, if you would?
Well, we haven't done that ranking. What we do is we look at what we call industries, sectors that are key economic drivers, and then things like retail, construction, other services. These are sort of what we call trailing industries. If you look at construction overall, real estate, then you have to say, do we pull out some of the financial services like the mortgage lending industry? It would be significant because you have, despite the problems of the housing industry, you still have a pretty diverse and vital real estate market in Southern California for office and industrial space.
Correct. The commercial world is still doing well. But when you have a 10% budget cut for a state, and some of that's going to be hitting one of those areas where we had great employment gains, do you think that we're probably going to end up with an increase in unemployment and then maybe a lack of space being needed?
What we're expecting is the unemployment rate to go up. If you look around Southern California, you've got a pretty interesting spread. For example, in L.A. County, you've got a 9.2% office vacancy rate. It's going down. And you have just slightly over 2 million square feet of space under construction. So that means basically you're looking at a shortage. Government might take some of that, but generally they tend to build their own buildings. And then when you get to the industrial market, you've got a 1.6% vacancy rate heading, well, sort of sideways. You can't go much lower than 1.6%. And you've got just 3.1 million square feet of space under construction. And there does seem to be demand for space in Southern California on the industrial side, but the market isn't able to meet that demand. So this has been something that we've been looking at for several years now.
Sounds like you have a lot of statistics that you have to pay attention to.
We have way too many statistics, and we have to read a lot to keep up with things.
Is it difficult to be accurate when projecting what's next?
It gets to be a real challenge, and one thing that people have to consider, the three largest industries in Los Angeles County at least, international trade, tourism, and motion picture and TV production, are very poorly reported by the government agencies. You know, if you go to the monthly reports that come out from the State Employment Development Department, there's no line for international trade. It's scattered over several industries, the same thing with tourism. And then in motion pictures, we know that a significant number of the people that work in that industry are independent contractors and don't show up in these numbers at all.
When the governor talks about a 10% budget shortfall, there's some sort of element of surprise to me that's attached to that. That wasn't expected, was it?
Well, I think you'd have to say the more realistic person expected it. When they came up with the state budget in Sacramento, there was a lot of back padding and saying, oh, look at us. We have done We have delivered a balanced budget. But Elizabeth Hill, the financial analyst up in Sacramento, who everybody needs to listen to, said, no way. You're bound to have another budget deficit this year. And Elizabeth was right. So you sort of look at all the rhetoric that comes out of Sacramento and say, unless there's a significant change in the way that the state handles its budget, there are going to be deficits every year, despite how good the economy is doing.
Well, how does a state deal with deficits? I know how the federal government can deal with them. I don't think we have the same ability to crank out state capital the way the government does for the U.S. So how do we deal with a budget that goes negative? Where does the money come from, or does it get borrowed from the future?
In some cases, it gets borrowed from the future. They do a lot of rearranging of the budget chairs, and a lot of very, very critical programs, projects get shoved to the back of the line. So this is always, whenever you have this situation, you look at the damage that we're doing to the state longer run. So we just have to watch and see what happens. I think one of the initiatives on the state ballot next year is going to be to prevent taking of transportation funds and using them for other purposes in the government budget. So it's Sacramento is an interesting place. It's like they don't want to make anybody mad at them, and so they don't say, well, maybe we either have to cut programs permanently or raise taxes, and they don't want to do either thing.
It sounds like a microcosm of the federal government, and there's a lot of interesting things being talked about right now. So we're in a political year that we're going to have an election next year, and there's a lot of grandstanding about what to do for the people that are going to be damaged and lose their home. Are you worried they might go too far in helping and really set a precedent problem?
Yes, very definitely. Whenever the federal government says we're going to solve a problem, you start to bite your fingernails.
Okay.
And you just have to watch and see, does anything really happen? Because this is the run-up to the 2008 presidential election. Are you going to have anything of any consequence that does come out of Washington, D.C.? I would sort of doubt it, because I think they don't want to do anything that the opposing party can take them to task for. But whenever the federal government sort of tinkers, they might say, well, this is going to solve the problem. But then you have the law of unintended consequences, and that could come back to haunt you in a couple of years.
I really like that sentence. I'm going to write that down. Law of unintended consequences. I do. I really like that. One of the rules that I just read they were thinking of tinkering with was the bankruptcy changes that they accomplished a couple of years ago. There's a bill right now that they're discussing giving the judge the right to basically recast the real estate loan if somebody's in foreclosure and declared bankruptcy, even to the point where they just arbitrarily make part of the loan disappear if the house has less value than the loan amount.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the ramifications of something like that would be?
You have to say, oh, my goodness, okay, what happens here? Does the new owner immediately go down and apply for a reassessment down, because obviously you've lost property value there? What does it mean to the lender? How deep are their pockets? And one thing that people have to remember, there's just a lot of concern about the health of the financial system, because there's still the feeling that there's a lot of hidden booby traps and all this subprime lending that went on. So anything that you do that might impair the financial stability of banks and other lenders, I think people would get very, very nervous about that.
I would think, too, lenders looking at that decision would sit there and go, okay, if that's possible, then we're going to require bigger and bigger down payments because we're going to have that margin of error should the judge decide something that will be safe no matter what.
Oh, yeah. No, see, that's this is a law of unintended consequences operating.
That's right. Well, that's why they better think some of this through.
Well, that's what makes you worry, because a lot of times it's not a thoughtful solution. It's something that would gain the attention of television cameras.
Well, I can see where politicians would do that. Bernanke probably shouldn't be doing that. He came out with a suggestion that we have a kind of a another set of Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac guidelines that went up to $1 million. So that would maybe take care of the jumbo loans. But again, I don't know what the ramifications would be if the losses on those loans would be gigantic or not.
Well, it's interesting that we get into jumbo loan territory because I was talking to somebody last week, and they were asking questions about the WGA strike, and they said the last strike in 1988, which went on for 5 months, had an impact on the million-dollar housing market over on the west side. And you have to say, oh, is this what, you know, do we need any more instability because that sector has been a little bit hurt by the toughness in getting jumbo loans.
That's true. Now, what was the year, what strike year was that?
It was 1988,
okay,
and
that
went on for 5 months.
That was right at, very close to the price boom, the peak of the boom last time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Leslie Appleton Young came out with some numbers in the transactions they expect to occur for real estate next year is something around 334,000 in 2008. That's down from something like 620,000 for 2004 and 2005.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of people thought, and they even said, that our boom was caused by demographic strength. And so what happened to our boom if that's, in fact, was responsible for it?
Well, you have to say you have to look at the boom very cautiously. I think a lot of the boom was people who were afraid they wouldn't get into the housing market in California. And so they resorted to subprime loans and didn't do their homework very well or didn't want to understand the reality. And then what I'm sensing is that probably more and more speculators were involved in the market than anybody had any idea of. And there's certain interesting little telltale signs of that. For example, down around the Irvine Industrial Park, all of a sudden you had developers that wanted to put high-rise condos in that area, and people were saying, well, is this a product type that people in Southern California, especially Orange County, would be interested in? And they said, oh, we have a lot of expressions of interest. People really want to buy this stuff. And guess what? Most of these projects have just sort of faded away.
They have.
Yeah.
You know, the speculation aspect of an investment, it certainly does kick in. The emotional side of a boom definitely kicks in. But a lot of that happens to owner-occupants as well, where they decide to take on debt and bigger homes than they normally would because the gain can be greater on $1 million home in a boom than it can on a $500,000 home.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so they kind of fed it. The people that were living in there became speculators as well. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think, you hear stories about people buying, say, condos, lofts in downtown L.A., and they saw that they seemed to be selling very, very strongly. So they didn't go out and do a refi and try to get a bigger home or whatever, but they bought additional units, and now all of a sudden the market has disappeared. And so they're sitting there with units that they're going to have to try to sell over the next couple of years, and it's going to be tough for them.
Since we last talked, there were 1,300 houses auctioned off by various companies. The ads ran in the Sunday LA Times. And looking back just a couple years ago, is there any way we could have projected that we would be needing auctions to move real estate?
Oh, I think, yeah. You sort of viewed what was going on a couple of years ago, and you have to say, okay, this sounds too good to be true. This is not going to come to any good end. And any time you have, a drastic turn in the housing market, auctions are the best way to go. So, you expect auctions, foreclosure sales. I think you're going to see a lot of these going forward into 2008.
In 2005, I'm sure you got up in front of an audience then and probably said something like, we better be careful going forward. How hard is it to get an audience to believe something negative when everything is still so good?
It's very hard to change their mind. I remember I was asked to do a presentation, and it was for a credit union's customers, and a lot of people in the room, they wanted to get out and buy other, additional homes. They were, literally investors, speculators, whatever you want to call them. And my words were there, we'll be very, very careful. You may be getting close to the top. And oh no, they were just certain that this thing was going to go on. So you wonder how many people in that room got hung out to dry.
I would say probably a lot of them. But, some of them were really knowledgeable people. We had debates with economists in San Diego in 2005 in front of realtors.
Mm-hmm.
And the person I was debating was telling the audience that everything was wonderful and they in fact, needed to convert apartments to condos or they would have a tremendous shortfall. And that was probably the worst suggestion they could have made. So these are the people that are telling them what to do.
Oh, yeah. No, it's very interesting when you watch this all, you know, the in Los Angeles City, they're talking about having higher densities, and so we can build more housing units. And you have to say, well, what price range of housing unit are you going to build, and is there going to be affordable units in there? You've got to be very careful when you get into situations like this. And it's going to be quite interesting to see how many for-sale condos in downtown Long Beach and downtown L.A. end up in the rental market.
Yeah, of course. That's exactly what happens. There's just not enough takers, so they do end up getting rented. At the auction over the weekend, Orange County condos typically went from 140 to 170.
Mm-hmm.
That's a number that hasn't been talked about for a long time.
Well, it's funny because a couple of years ago, you started to have young people say, oh, my gosh, I'm never going to be able to get into the Southern California housing market. And my answer was, just wait. You may be surprised very, very pleasantly. And for a lot of people trying to get in, there's going to be a lot of opportunities over the next 12 months.
You know, emotion does play a very key role in these booms where you just feel like you're being left out when every other conversation is about how wonderful somebody's done and you don't own. When now we're on the downside and every day you can open up a newspaper and read the opposite, does that also really build momentum to where no one wants to do even a logical purchase?
Yeah, I think you have the media focus on the problems in the housing industry. It's like every week you have a new report that says, oh, defaults are up strongly, foreclosures are up strongly. This just scares the person who might think about going into the market and seeing what they could find. Probably, if you really wanted to be practical, you would wait until the second half of 2008 because you're going to find a lot of bargains out there. But then as somebody pointed out, if you buy a foreclosure, you have to inspect the property very, very carefully because who was in there, how long was the property vacant, was it trashed in any way? So you have to be careful on some of these things.
One of the bargains that might exist is still having a 6% interest rate. Can you look forward at all in 2009 and 10 and see that changing in any significant way?
Well, if you look at what the Federal Reserve has done, they've lowered interest rates to a point they say, well, we're going to just sort of sit and watch and wait. I would guess that over the course of the next 12 months, if they'd made any move, it might be to lower the federal funds rate. Probably the long-term money markets would sort of follow that because risk is now acknowledged in the financial markets. So I think you have an opportunity there. And the other thing is to make sure that your credit is in impeccable condition. Two things, credit in good shape, and then have you saved enough money for a decent down payment.
As an economist, do you see anything in the later in the decade, 2009 and 10, that worries you about interest rates significantly rising for any reason?
Well, right now, it's hard to look out.
Okay.
It has gotten to the point where some things come in out of left field, and they just sort of catch you off guard. You're in a very complicated world now because you have to look at what goes on in China. People are concerned about a bubble in their stock market. You look at India, and it seems like they're opening up their economy to the rest of the world, but still there are hurdles there. You look at what's going on in Pakistan and just political uncertainty there, people fretting about decline in oil production in Venezuela and Mexico, which are important suppliers. There's just a lot of things that you have to continually monitor, and then you have to try to sort of weave these things together and see what type of a scenario you come out with.
Do you think projecting out 5 years is much more difficult than 12 months then?
I think 12 months probably, yeah. They're both are risky.
Okay.
Both are risky, and you have to tell people, okay, we're doing a projection out 5 years, but there are a lot of unknowns out there, more unknowns than there were several years ago, and so you have to sort of monitor the situation and then be ready to make a change if something changes dramatically that upsets your forecast.
When people hear an opinion of an economist, is there sort of an implied this could be plus or minus so many percent where they don't really try to hold you to the letter of what you've said, but there's a range that's acceptable?
Oh, yeah. You have to say, okay, there is a range here. But what I think you have to do as an economist is try to bring forth all the things that people should consider in their decisions and try to point out some of the possible unintended consequences.
Do you see any, if no matter who's elected, what side is elected, do you see anything coming down the pike as far as tax law changes?
I think if the Democrats take control of the White House, there will be a lot of tinkering with the tax laws. They can't help themselves. You have to see who the Democratic candidate is.
I guess we just found out your political persuasion.
Well, no, I'm basically I'm apolitical.
It didn't sound like it.
It didn't sound like it, but I am a realist.
Okay.
And you look at them and you say, this is the characteristics of the Republican Party. These are the characteristics of the Democratic Party. And so you sort of scratch your head sometimes and say, can't there be a third party that would be a little bit more realistic and rational?
Well, I guess my concern is if they start playing with things like capital gain rates or trying to figure out a better way to make the alternative minimum tax disappear by playing with interest deductions, that could have a very big impact on real estate.
Oh, yeah. It could have a huge impact on real estate. So we just have to watch and see what they do because, they're going to try to solve the problems of people being taken advantage of with mortgages and what have you. So next 12 months, the run-up to the November 2008 election, expect a lot of talk, but not much real action. Then we have to see what happens in January of 2009 and what the agendas are.
Okay. What indicators do you watch for that let you know the worst of a decline is over?
On housing, the smart money says watch the inventory of unsold homes, and when that starts to move sideways, and then if it starts to decline, then that means probably the worst is past, but there's still going to be some tough times.
Okay, if real estate was a baseball game, what inning do you think we are in right at the moment?
Well, given the current cycle, we're probably in about the third inning.
Third inning, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's plenty of time to go. I'd like to mention, we only have a couple more minutes. I want to just mention a number of categories and rate them as to their importance with 1 to 10, 10
okay.
being most important. Okay?
Okay.
All right. California is going to deal with a record number of foreclosures next year. So where would you rate that on a scale?
That's probably about a 7.
Okay. And why isn't it higher than that? But that's still pretty high.
That's still high, but there's other things that we've got to worry about, like drought. We've got to watch and see what comes out of Sacramento in terms of water and health care policies. Those are very, very important.
What about migration numbers if they turn negative, where we end up with more people leaving than come in?
That would be probably about a 6.
Okay.
But today on the freeway, right beside me, a car from Nevada and a car from Utah, both driving inbound on the Santa Ana Freeway to downtown at 7 a.m. in the morning.
So all is well.
I think all is well, yes.
Okay. Two people showed up. That's good. That's a good start.
Well, there's one thing you have to look at, Southern California. If you have a multi-earner household, which a lot of households are, there's really only 4 metro areas that you want to live in,
mm-hmm.
New York, Chicago, the Bay Area, and Los Angeles, because the idea there is that if anybody in the household, they all get a job, but somebody doesn't like the job they have, they can go out and get another good job in a Los Angeles or a Bay Area. You can't do that in Denver or Omaha, Nebraska.
Correct. Just a isolated group of jobs, so you don't have too many choices.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, last question. What's the most positive thing you see for our area in the next 3 or 4 years?
Most positive thing, it's that its potential still hasn't been tapped hardly at all. And so we have this potential, but we've never been able to take advantage of it.
I'm sure that we're going to get out of this mess. The real estate is going to take a hit. It needs to, because we need to get the new group of people being able to afford to where they can get their starter home and move up the food chain like the rest of us have enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it's important to be able to provide affordable housing, but sometimes we shoot ourselves in the foot.
Well, Jack Kaiser, thank you so much for joining us again, and it's really a pleasure. I learn a lot by asking you questions.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week here on News Talk 590 KTIE.